It's Thursday, July 16, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We sure had fun last night on Rob Van Dam's show, RVD Radio, on blogtalkradio.com. It's a lot of fun. Paul Armentano was on the line, as well as Bruce Merkin from the Marijuana Policy Project and a bunch of other guests. We had a blast talking about it, and you can check out the link at stash.normal.org, where you can download an archive of the show and listen for yourself. And speaking of online internet live talk radio, it's a go for the Normal show. That's right, a live 2-hour Saturday night talk radio show on CBS streaming radio. That's right, CBS streaming radio, which will be hyped by New York City CBS stations like WCBS and 1010 Winds. Yep, we are going on, and it will debut on Labor Day weekend, September 5th, so set your calendars for that. The show will run from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. to 8 Pacific Time, and our call-in number will be 877-NORMAL.org. I am so excited. This has kind of been the best day ever for me as well, because I just got my notification of our backstage passes for the Portland Coliseum tomorrow for the Slightly Stupid Snoop Dogg Blazed and Confused Tour. I'll be backstage interviewing the band Slightly Stupid, and maybe, cross your fingers, hope we can get a word or two in with Snoop Dogg himself. So we'll be broadcasting some of those clips on Monday's show. Tomorrow's podcast will be produced fairly early, because I've got to get out of here by 3 or so to go set up. Also, some other things I want to point out. Check out the blog at stash.normal.org. Got some updates out there, including Chris Goldstein, the founder of this podcast and the executive director of Normal New Jersey, who has written an open letter to Bill Maher, who he calls the high heckler. You'll definitely want to read that one. Also, for those of you who like to catch up on the stash through your cell phone, we've got a new way of catching that. Go to mippin.com/normalstash on your cell phone's browser. That's mippin, mippin.com/normalstash. It's a Normal shout-out. Time for some more shout-outs with a fantastic announcement for those of you living in Central Texas. Normal of Waco Incorporated is now online. You can get in touch with them by going to the Normal chapter listing at normal.org. They are now ready and looking for members to join up Normal of Waco. Our United States Virgin Islands chapter is going strong. They're just about to become incorporated, and they've invited me to come down to the islands in the middle of November to speak to them. Gee, plane ticket and expenses paid to go to the Virgin Islands during rainy November in the Pacific Northwest. I'll have to check my schedule. Also, we got a story on the blog from Jacksonville Normal, who got kicked out of a Hooters restaurant for having their meeting there. I don't necessarily recommend chapters have meetings at Hooters, but it does kind of surprise me that the company that sells scantily clad women and beer with their chicken wings would kick out a marijuana organization. And finally, we're taking your information if you want to be involved as part of our normal street teams in the San Francisco Bay Area and the Los Angeles County area for passing out flyers to all the different dispensaries out there to get them out to NormalCon at the end of September. So send me an email at stash@normal.org if you'd like to be involved with the street teams. We might have a little bit of normal swag for you in exchange for your efforts. Now, coming up on today's Normal Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines and a look at the new report from the California Board of Equalization that says legalized marijuana would raise $1.4 billion for the Golden State every year. We also go across the Pacific to the state of Hawaii, where their legislature has overridden the veto of Governor Linda Lingle and approved a bill for a medical marijuana study task force. We take a look at the burgeoning prison industrial complex and a company that makes mobile modular jail cells. And our good friend, the prohibitionist John English of Portland, Oregon, is back with some more reefer madness that's just screaming to be debunked. Today, we take a look at our Southern California scene with Terry Joyce. She brings us Kent Kelly, who works at The Pharmacy, one of Los Angeles's largest dispensaries, with a look back at the 60s and how we can avoid repeating the same mistakes and finally get marijuana re-legalized in this country. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature a Rockin' Thursday tune from Kevin Henninger, a song called New York Nickelbag. And in our cannabis conversations, we visit with Brian K. Phillips, another caregiver in the state of California who is being persecuted for his use of medical marijuana. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. California Board of Equalization report. Legalized marijuana would reap $1.38 billion. The California State Board of Equalization released a legislative analysis today, estimating that the state would collect up to $1.38 billion in new revenue from taxing and regulating the sale of marijuana. The report is based on Assemblymember Tom Ammiano, Democrat of San Francisco's groundbreaking legislation, the Marijuana Control, Regulation, and Education Act, or AB 390, that would tax and regulate marijuana in a manner similar to alcohol. The bill would create a regulatory structure similar to that already in place for beer, wine, and liquor, permitting taxed sales to adults while barring sales to or possession by those under 21. Ammiano said, quote, "We can no longer afford to keep our heads in the sand when it comes to marijuana. The move towards regulating and taxing marijuana is long overdue and simply common sense. The benefits of regulation are clear. Controlling marijuana would generate up to $1.3 billion in much-needed revenue for the state, restrict access to only those over 21, end environmental damage to our public lands from illicit crops, and improve public safety by redirecting law enforcement efforts to more serious crimes. It defies reason to propose closing parks and eliminating vital services for the poor while this potential revenue is available. California has an historic opportunity to be the first state in the nation to enact smart, responsible public policy for the control and regulation of marijuana. End quote. Hawaii legislature overrides governor's veto of medical marijuana study. We just received word that both chambers have voted to override the governor's veto of Senate Bill 1058, which sets up a task force to discuss changes in Hawaii's medical marijuana program. Thanks to all of you who made phone calls, sent emails, and faxes. When the official vote is posted, we will let you know who voted no. There were 9 of them. We will also ask you to thank legislators for taking this important action, and later, we will need to keep pressure on the Department of Public Safety to be sure they convene the task force. Gene Ota, Executive Director, Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. Well, of course, this is great news. The veto was surprising in the first place that it really didn't do anything much more than just study medical marijuana. It was meant to look at some of the problems that the Hawaiian Islands face in their medical marijuana program. For example, if you are a medical marijuana grower on Oahu and your patient lives on Maui, you got to get that marijuana from one island to another. And there's no little freeway you can drive from one island to the other, so you have to take boat or plane, which then gets you into federal territory when we're talking about the jurisdictions and marijuana and the law. So that's a unique problem to Hawaii. This task force would just study how medical marijuana is being distributed in the other 13 states and set up suggestions for Hawaii as to how they might address the situation. Unlike what Governor Lingle said in her veto statement, this in no way violates federal policy to simply study a policy. Locking people in cages. Good old-fashioned American entrepreneurship. They say, build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. So, I suppose, if you build a better people trap, they'll construct a 4-lane highway to your mammoth corporate headquarters. From Eagle Modular, www.jailcells.com, Detention Housing. Eagle offers the only proven cost-effective solution for immediate correctional facility expansion that meets and or exceeds the stringent requirements needed for detention housing. Our pre-engineered steel-welded design offers the same quality of security you find in conventional brick-and-mortar structures for a fraction of the cost. From the Johnson City Press, Carter County, Tennessee. The modular units will house 96 prisoners convicted of misdemeanor crimes. Those prisoners who are serving a felony sentence will remain in the current jail on the second floor of the Carter County Justice Center. The modulars are the first phase in the settlement of a federal class action jail overcrowding lawsuit. The county paid Eagle Corporation of Peoria $920,000 for the modulars. The cost of site preparation raised the cost of the project to $1.2 million. Eagle Corporation President Tim Tobin said it would have cost the county 3 times that amount to construct a conventional building to house 96 prisoners. A Carter County official said, quote, "I feel we have saved the county millions of dollars." He based his opinion not just on the novel building, but also in avoiding a court decision in the lawsuit, quote, "We were 3 times the population the old jail was designed for. As overcrowded as we were, our chances of winning in federal court were slim to none." End quote. And just what is driving the county jails in Tennessee to be so overcrowded with misdemeanor offenders? Could it be that possession of any amount of marijuana in Tennessee, or even marijuana paraphernalia, is a misdemeanor punishable by 1 year in jail and a $2,500 fine with a $250 minimum? Could it be that there were 38,889 drug abuse violations in Tennessee in 2007, according to the FBI, and since 47% of all drug arrests nationally are for marijuana, Tennessee arrested over 18,000 cannabis consumers, presumably jailing most of them for some period of time? People often ask me why, if the facts are so obvious about marijuana, that it isn't a slam dunk to overturn prohibition. Well, go visit the list of Eagle Modular's suppliers and try to imagine how many jobs are created at both Eagle and these supplying corporations because of the federally forced demand for human cages. There's a clue there.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
John English 2, Reefer Madness Boogaloo. My favorite locksmith-turned-prohibitionist, Portland's own John English, has penned four more anti-pot screeds in the Online Examiner. Now, some people cringe when they read tripe like John's, but I jump for joy. Not only does John provide irreplaceable blog fodder, but the idiocy of his writing and the fallacy of his reasoning illustrate how desperate prohibitionists are becoming. Anyone who tortures logic and the English language as John does should be brought up on war crimes charges, or at least given a job app for the CIA. In a piece called Medical Marijuana and the Rule of Law, John delivers the tired snake oil salesman argument that medical marijuana is akin to the bottles of cocaine tooth drops from 1885 and Bayer Company heroin bottles from the same era. Yes, John, cocaine, opium derivatives, and even cannabis were sold for medicinal purposes around the turn of the 20th century, just as they are now. Cocaine is a Schedule II drug. Doctors in any state can prescribe it. Morphine, oxycodone, and other opioids, now admittedly not heroin, are also Schedule II and Schedule III prescribable by physicians. These drugs have safety ratios between 1 to 6 and 1 to 20, meaning they're therapeutic or medicinal if you take dosage 1, but if you take 6 to 20 times that dose, you'll likely die. Only cannabis, marooned in Schedule 1, but not its synthetic 10 times more potent cousin Marinol, which is in Schedule 3, only cannabis is not prescribable by doctors in any state. Not even the medical marijuana states, where it's only recommended, and its safety ratio is 1 to 1,000. But that's not the shocking stuff.
The rule of law is intrinsic to the survival of the society in which people function. Hedonists, pursuing their lusts, often step over the lines, not only of propriety, but of legality as well, becoming criminals. Pedophilia, as well as drug use, are examples of this. Society has determined that these practices are so destructive that they must remain illegal. Yet there are groups that disagree. Both groups have organized and also attempted to change the laws by hiring lobbyists in D.C. One issue, obviously more repugnant, yet in ways, pedophilia and the pro-legalization movement are not so different. Both harm the innocent and those unable to foresee the ramifications of their actions.
Yeah, Normal and NAMBLA, ideological equals in John English's mind. Normal wants to smoke joints, NAMBLA wants to fuck boys. Could it be any more obvious? I can't even wrap my mind around rebutting that, John. In another piece called Marijuana Smoking, Pulmonary and Respiratory Complications, John does a lengthy cut and paste of the study Effects of Marijuana Smoking on Pulmonary Function and Respiratory Complications in order to explain to us why society needs to lock people up to protect them from a cough. He begins by noting,
although I understand that druggy websites have tons of bogus studies for you to refer to, and that they seem to contradict the legitimate science. But these doctors, PhDs, and research scientists are not like some of the doctors and research scientists who were and currently are drug users themselves, and therefore have an axe to grind.
Unlike, say, the doctors, PhDs, and research scientists working for or funded by the National Institutes on Drug Abuse, who can only get research funding for their marijuana studies if they present a grant request explaining how they plan to prove the dangers of marijuana and get turned down if they ask for money to prove cannabis's medical efficacy. Yeah, no axe there. And I guess I now have to refer to my cannabis science guest as
Dr.
Mitch Earlywine now. Funny thing, though, the study that John Pace into his article, and is it really your article when 90% of it is a Pace job, has this citation. Some of the known tobacco smoking-related adverse effects include cough, chronic bronchitis, impairment of gas exchange, and airway obstruction that leads to chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Tashkin, D.P., smoked marijuana as a cause of lung injury, Minaldi Arch Crest, 2005. Funny, because that's the same doctor, or is it
Doctor
Donald P. Tashkin of the UCLA Medical Center, who has been engaged in 30 years of research using the largest case control study of marijuana smokers in history. He was originally attempting to document his hypothesis that marijuana smoking leads to lung cancer and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. Not only did he find no association between even heavy chronic marijuana smoking and lung cancer and COPD, but he stated just this year, Tashkin says, quote, "Early on, when our research appeared as if there would be a negative impact on lung health, I was opposed to legalization because I thought it would lead to increased use and that would lead to increased health effects. But at this point, I'd be in favor of legalization. I wouldn't encourage anybody to smoke any substances, but I don't think it should be stigmatized as an illegal substance. Tobacco smoking causes far more harm, and in terms of an intoxicant, alcohol causes far more harm." End quote. In The Medical Marijuana Scam, John opens with the picture of the 10-stage Faces of Meth Deterioration of a young meth addict's series of mugshots. Point taken, John. Don't do meth. And an incorrect explanation that THC is a Schedule 1 substance to debunk one of his commenters' correct assertions about Schedule 3 Marinol. But the gist of this article is a return to the mid-90s footage of former Normal director Richard Cowan explaining how acceptance of medical marijuana will lead to eventual legalization of recreational marijuana, which, of course, will turn us into a nation of heroin addicts. I agree with Cowan. Once people find out they've been lied to about cannabis's medical uses, they'll question other prohibitionist lies, which will lead to overturning prohibition. But even if I didn't believe that, how does we legalizers' support of medical marijuana make the relief a chemo patient feels after smoking a joint any less real? In reading now 9 of John's articles, I found an interesting dichotomy he creates. On the one hand,
like most users, he cannot see what it's doing to himself and his loved ones. That's part of the pernicious aspect of using marijuana. The hedonistic, immature, and irresponsible seeker of highs cannot see the subtle steps into drug use and that users sometimes grow up and somehow quit. Normally, they grow old and damage their mental acuity or push the envelope and die prematurely. Users make bad decisions. Because of the bad decisions, users violate the laws and contribute to every social ill of the land. Users put others at risk. Users try to get others to be like them, sucking them into the lost world of criminality, life without hope, disability, and prison. They believe all this justifies what they do. It doesn't. The lengths to which they'll go, the lies they'll tell to get their own way, is pathetic. The society they're attacking is ours, and they want our children to be like them. Don't forget that. Protect your children at all costs. Like it or not, just like the narco-terrorists they purchase their drugs from, they are at war with us. And kids push the envelope. It's part of growing up and breaking away.
But on the other hand,
the American public has been scammed, intentionally. The legalizers made their presentations, feigning desperate need, and demanded to be able to smoke their medicine. as the public heard the pleas from so many, seeming to suffer pathetically from all sorts of maladies, and that their condition would be helped by smoking marijuana, as anticipated, the public began to have compassion, agreeing, why shouldn't people be able to use a substance if they were dying anyway? The people bought it, and therefore, we were all scammed, and California's Proposition 215 was the outcome, which has taken us deeper into this whole mess.
So, then, marijuana users are the scourge of society seeking to lead your children into an abyss of despair, and yet the same people were able to fool 70% of the American public, a majority of voters in 9 states, 83 out of 83 counties in Michigan on our last go at it, and the legislatures of 4 states, or 6 if you count Minnesota and New Hampshire this year, which were stymied by veto. We were able to fool all those people into believing marijuana's medical efficacy and supporting legalization for medical use, despite being the child predators and terrible criminals that he says we are. It's like Bill Hicks once said.
George Bush says we are losing the war on drugs. Well, you know what that implies? There's a war going on, and people on drugs are winning it. Ah! Well, what does that tell you about drugs? Some smart, creative motherfuckers on that side. They're winning a war, and they're fucked up.
By the way, John, I'm still waiting for that class action lawsuit from medical marijuana patients against Normal for defrauding them into thinking the pot they are smoking is somehow helping them. Finally, in a piece called To Marijuana Users, John explains how his experience as a locksmith led him to seeing the horrors of drug use. The beaten wife whose locks he has changed, the parents locking their teenager out of the home for smoking pot, and so on. But the real cause of his reefer madness, as John finally writes something with some honesty?
I can recount for you my own history and how my beloved children followed my example into drugs, when my only drug use at the time was marijuana. My using had come because of a great loss, divorce. I'd lost the only thing of import to me, my family. I can also tell you that not only do children follow in their parents' and older siblings' footsteps, as mine and their moms did. Our role modeling, as parents, sometimes inadvertently, guides when we're not aware of it. But also, almost invariably, all children which begin with pot also push the envelope and proceed into other and harder drugs. I can tell you of the heartbreak when I realized how I had laid the groundwork for my children's grief. My son, whom I loved with all my heart, made subsequent bad choices, ended up not only in jail, but in prison, in what I found out later are called the Gladiator Academies of the prison system.
I am sincerely sorry for the terrible turns your life took, John, following your use of marijuana. My father was an alcoholic. Up until age 12, my life was severely impacted by his drug abuse. He, like you, had a moment of clarity and realized his life had become unmanageable and that he needed to stop his use of that deadly drug. He's been clean and sober now for 29 years, longer than he had been a drunk, 25 years. However, you don't see me advocating for a repeal of the 21st Amendment and locking up beer drinkers for the sake of the children. Not invariably do children who smoke pot use harder drugs. In fact, by the government's own statistics, there are 100 million people 12 and older who have tried marijuana, but only 2 million current regular monthly cocaine users and 135,000 current heroin users. By far, most people who use marijuana don't go on to use other drugs. For every 104 people who have tried marijuana, there is only one person you could classify as a cocaine addict. It sounds like you and your children made some bad decisions. But take that finger you're pointing at marijuana and try pointing it in the mirror.
Win people over. You can't just drone on like Ben Stein. You've got to have a little more showmanship. Here, watch.
Normal Con 2009. Yes, we cannabis. September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure. And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
I think it's time for a debate, and I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana.
At our 38th annual conference, you'll learn all the facts you need in the debate to legalize marijuana.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy, the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President, or waiting until the last minute to book your trip to NormalCon 2009. Early bird registration rates apply until August. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at NORML.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Weed.
That's Hooey Valley, Hooey Ha.
Weed. Now it's time for a report from the epicenter of American cannabis culture with our Southern California correspondent. You know her from ComedyNation.com and her appearance as a finalist on season one of NBC's Last Comic Standing. It's our friend, cannabis comedian and marijuana activist, the lovely and talented Terry Joyce. And we're back down in Southern California with the lovely and talented Terry Joyce. Hi, Terry.
Hello.
So what's been happening for you this week?
Well, you know, I always have the opportunity to meet some really interesting people, you know, around the medical marijuana community. I've been very fascinated by the history of when marijuana kind of came on the scene in our society and how it affected people in what we call the hippie movement and how it's really changed anti-war, you know, stopping the Vietnam War basically, and you know, creating the internet by Steve Jobs, and just the history of how that spirit, or what I think is like more like a kind of an awakening in people to make change. Mm-hmm. And our guest Kent was there from the very beginning, and also works here in Southern California at the pharmacy at a dispensary. So he's also works in the community. So I'd like to welcome our guest. And you know what, Kent? I don't know your last name.
Kent Kelly.
All right.
Welcome, Kent Kelly.
Hi, Kent. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Is that Kelly with an EY or a Y?
E.
EY. Okay. Kent Kelly from the pharmacy. Welcome to the Daily Audio Stash. And, Terry was mentioning, it sounds like your history goes back, quite a bit here. How do you see medical marijuana as part of the larger, picture of fighting for, you know, our rights and our liberties?
Well, you know, it's kind of obvious that we have what I call the Flat Earth Society people still out there who believe it has absolutely no redeeming value, and they want to have a little bit of a Pleasantville society maintained. And I find that through unsolicited testimonies and the way I'm working, it has tremendous value in so many ways. But I always like to clarify that it's not snake oil, and it's not for everybody. And that's... you should have a right to express alternative means of healing. Mm-hmm. And down there at the pharmacy, we call it the gateway herb. We also have and employ board state certified herbalists to deal with the other 400 plus herbs that we have. We give consultations in Ayurvedic, Chinese, Amazonian, Western, Indian medicine, and there's a gateway herb. Hmm. And like the other herbs, have value, and if they're giving false testimonies towards and disparaging remarks towards marijuana, they're also missing the boat on the other herbs that are available.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you bring that up, Kent, because it goes along with something that's been a theory of mine for a long time. And that is the resistance to medical marijuana isn't so much the resistance against the plant. It's the resistance of overturning an entire paradigm that says nature can't take care of us. We have to synthesize nature and make it into a pill before it's any good for us. So I'm really glad you bring that up.
Yes. Also, we have patients that we supply at no cost if they have 6 months or less to live. Cannabis, and they are, in conjunction with what I would call the Western medicine, able to actually live through the cure that's about to kill them. And I joke with some of the patients sometimes and saying, aren't you ever going to die? And like 3 years later, these people came in all gaunt in the beginning, barely alive, 6 months to live, and they were able to maintain their nutrition and strength through the ingestion of cannabis as an alternative. So sometimes in conjunction with just a pill or other forms of medicine, say in the case of the AIDS patients, this has been very beneficial. And not only do these people get strong, I see them become buff and they're out getting jobs. And it's amazing. And quite honestly, until I got involved on the end of actually working in the dispensary, it became a seeing as believing. It just is unfolding in front of me, so it's quite amazing.
Yeah.
I would have never thought it, when we tried it back in 1966, 67,
I so wish that we could take, everybody who's got this prohibitionist reefer madness mindset and just take them down to a California dispensary co-op or collective and let them meet the people who are actually using it. I often joke that, because they this is something the prohibitionists like to say, is that we legalizers fooled the country with medical marijuana. We fooled them. And I always say, I'm still waiting for the class action lawsuit for medical marijuana patients who think they were fooled. The patients never seem to be complaining about it. It's the people who don't use it.
Exactly. And, just like in Western medicine, there are abusers. And just because there's the Rush Limbaughs of the world that will abuse something and purchase in parking lots at restaurants doesn't mean the people that actually legitimately need it now shouldn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that are abusing. We have a society that might have a tendency to abuse anything, whether it be alcohol, cannabis or pharmaceutical, but I don't think that should be a shutoff valve to the rest of the society that's actually in a valid need of it. And we call some of these people it's good for their mental health. They may think they're abusing, but they're actually blending in other ways with each other and finding more commonality amongst themselves.
I agree with that.
What's that, Terry?
Excuse me?
I really agree with that. I think that a lot of people, may be depressed or have, things that are psychological, and maybe chemically imbalanced, in terms of their emotional state. And I think that a lot of people medicate themselves that way, and I think it's good for them. I think more people suffer from those kind of, ailments than they will even admit to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be abuse. It may just be that they are really, in some ways, treating themselves. Just like, when you want to drink alcohol to take the edge off or calm your nerves down. Medical marijuana is a better solution if you suffer from anxiety. I mean, that's one of my problems. I've suffered from agoraphobia when I was growing up, and also it tends to be an anxious person. And when I smoke marijuana, I'm able to relax and go, okay,
yeah,
everything's fine, and still be functional.
Yeah,
still be able to think, be functional. Get my work done. I drink alcohol, and I've gone to bed with some strange man that I wake up next to.
Well, okay, that's a subject for another show. Now, Kent, I wanted to get some long range perspective on this, because you mentioned, starting this out in the 60s, 66, 67, and Terry even mentioned that you were at the Democratic Convention in 68. And this was something, I was on Rob Van Dam's show yesterday, and while we were discussing these things, one of the callers called in and said, we're looking to the next generation because the young people know it's true, and by the next generation, this will all be legal. And one of my friends sitting next to me, Bobby B, who came up in that, 60s generation, generation said, yeah, that's what we said in the 60s. So what is it that happened to the 60s generation that seemed so promising that they would be in favor of liberalizing marijuana laws? What went wrong, and what do we do to stop that from happening with the next generation?
Well, I think a little bit has to do with, you know, as they got older and they got their children, they would extol the virtues of the time and how wonderful everything is, but they were getting overly protective of the kids. I was recently at a city council meeting down in Laguna Beach, and it all becomes about the kids, you know. The kids, you know, what are the kids going to think? And I started to think, well, you know, there's traffic, and what if those kids step into the street, you know, or they walk by alcohol every day at the local grocery store, or they walk by Rush Limbaugh's OxyContin in the CVS's and the drugstores. And I think it's just an overreaction to response to thinking maybe they went too far. And in some cases, they might have, but I think it has to do with some of the lies that were perpetuated during the day, that being they were lying about marijuana. And since people first tried that, and they go, well, you know, geez, that was a lie. You know, this isn't bad. You know, I'm doing okay. And when other things came along, they just assumed that everything was a lie. Well, maybe it wasn't such a good idea to do cocaine and methamphetamines and other drugs in a willy-nilly way. And I think telling the truth has more value than sitting around and putting everything under a neat little blanket, you know, the way they schedule marijuana and right next to heroin and cocaine. You can't fool kids, you know. And I think they're... when you perpetuate a lie, you just have the unintended consequences of what's going on. You know, if you're going to lie, then they think everything's a lie, you know. But if there's, you know, if you're telling the truth, like, you know, I guess they've had data and research in Amsterdam where people actually started doing less of everything, including marijuana, because it was out there and it was truthful, and people weren't being lied to, and the kids weren't being lied to. And I think this overreaction, being overprotective, using the crux of, like, you know, what it's going to do to the kids, is it's just an overreaction to their own lies that they had to deal with and come to grips with. And now I think there's a lot of overcompensation by these 60s people that came up. I find it hard to believe that actually it's come this far in California. I would have never believe it for a second. There's a certain amount of unreality when I'm working there at the dispensary that is still going on, and this is like 4 years later.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that this exists, you know?
It's a miracle, actually. And I'm wondering now if you think that the generation now that's come up post Prop 215, I mean, Prop 215 was 1996, so like if you were 12 years old when Prop 215 passed, you grew up your entire teenage life with a form of legal marijuana. So I'm wondering if the generation now has better education about it and doesn't think that, you know, oh, well, marijuana was okay, so heroin and meth is okay, that they might have a better education about it than the 60s generation did, and we won't have that same sort of problem of them having a backlash to it when they have kids. Do you think that's possible?
Well, you know, in the realm of possibilities, I guess that's possible, but I think putting more transparency in this and more information is going to actually, I believe, have less of that activity going on, because, like I said, if you're not caught as a lie as a parent, you're going to be more respected with other things that you may be given advice to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think non-availability of cannabis in the society and the over-availability of chemical substance will have people tend to go towards something that they might consider counterculture. So to deny something that I would call benefit is only opening the door for things that are harmful.
Yeah.
But I see hope in the fact that the information is out there, and they can't be lied to, nor are they being lied to, or they're not believing the lie. And things are progressing faster than I would have thought, yet out of frustration, it's hard for me to believe it's taken this long.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, I do have to kind of wrap things up here, but I want to give you a chance if there's anything you need to promote as far as the pharmacy or any of your own activities there, Kent. Give our listeners a chance to get in touch with you or check out a website or anything like that.
Well, right now I just put up a MySpace for Cherry Moon Shop, And one can go on there and see some of the artwork that I have going and other activities that we have going around our shop. You know, we have Art Walk Thursdays and sell a lot of icon pop art and collectibles from the 60s, albums, this and that at the Cherry Moon Shop on the MySpace. And someone can get in touch with me there.
Okay.
I would just recommend that anybody that's presently doing cannabis, not through the channels in California, of legality, that they should join, because just what I like to say, if only 300 people showed up at a Grateful Dead concert smoking a joint, they'd be in trouble, but they're safe in numbers. So the more people join the movement through legal channels and have a legitimate need to have cannabis, they ought to go see a recommended doctor and be involved with the numbers. It's like voting with your feet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all I would say about that.
All right. Well, check out Kent Kelly's Cherry Moon Shop at myspace.com/Cherry Moon Shop. We'll put a link to that up at the blog at stash.normal.org. And Terry Joyce, anything from you?
I have a, I just want to let everybody know that I have a regular comedy show in Los Angeles at Fay Dodo. We have a ladies' night, and we have some really wonderful comedians that come on. We had Ludovica last night, and Amy Ashton, and Laura Levitas. And it's really a great club. Even if you just want to go, and there's several bands, live music, and open mic night on Tuesday nights, and it's Fay Dodo. It's 5257 Adams Boulevard. They also have a website at faydodo.com. And that's basically it. I wish everybody a great week.
All right. Thanks, Terry Joyce and Kent Kelly from the pharmacy. Appreciate you joining us here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's Rockin' Thursday, and today we hear a traditional mix of acoustic and folk rock by Kevin Hinninger with his great song, New York Nickelbag. Kevin Hinninger from New Jersey is the 2006 American Marijuana Music Awards Best Rock winner. Kevin is a seasoned singer-songwriter who's been playing clubs and the underground scene for years. You can catch him performing regularly in clubs around New York as a solo act or in his band THC, which of course stands for the Hinninger Collection. For the latest about Kevin's music and gigs, check out myspace.com/Kevin Hinninger, that's H-I-N-N-I-N-G-E-R, and registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Kevin Hinninger with New York Nickelbag.
There used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. Some of it was Primo and some of it was Schwag. Some of it was Hydro and some of it was Bad. There used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. I'd follow my nose down to Washington Square. Look for a Rasta or a hippie with long hair. They'd sell them on the corners, you could get them everywhere. There used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. Indica, sativa, I don't really care. Harlem Sense Amelia is stronger than a bear. Mary Jane from Brooklyn with the fuzzy orange hair. There used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. I used to get deliveries from a guy called the Pope. He had a funny hat, but he had some high-grade smoke. I can still remember the skunk he used to have. And there used to be four joints in his New York nickel bags. Score in the Bronx, the Mets they score in Queens, the Giants score in Jersey where they get some killer green, the Knicks score in the Garden, and I score where I can, and there used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. Some people got five or six joints, but they rolled them thin. I'd be rolling bombers and they'd be rolling pins. I get high just thinking about the groovy times I had when there used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. The bags keep getting smaller like George Bush's brain. It's getting as expensive as his favorite drug, cocaine. Everyone should grow their own, the price is out of hand. And there used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. There used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag. There used to be four joints in a New York nickel bag.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org. Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our NORML daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. Here at The Stash, we're covering the stories of the average citizens who are trying so hard to follow their state's medical marijuana law, only to be taken down by overzealous law enforcement who just hate marijuana. One such case is a man by the name of Brian Keith Phillips, who joins us here from Los Angeles County. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad to be here and glad to have the opportunity to express not only my thoughts, but the fact of the written laws.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. Now, yours is one of many cases that we go through, and we just spoke with Eugene Davidovich last week about his case, and this is just another case of someone who has opened up a legal collective under Proposition 215 and SB 420 and all the Attorney General guidelines, only to be raided by the authorities. Tell people a little bit about your collective, how it was formed, and what happened in this case.
Okay, sir. I've been a citizen of California for 3 years now. Me and my first patient moved here. She's a registered nurse. We moved here in the intentions of not only giving caregiving, but basically she moved here as a registered nurse to work for the hospitals here. And that's how this first started. She works with cancer patients. And so, therefore, the attention was brought to us of such for Prop 215, because we was not aware of it when we moved here. And at that point, she became a patient. Now, I was her caregiver in where we came from. We came from the East Coast. We moved here. I was her legal caregiver at that point in time, and not for medical marijuana purposes, but in purposes in general.
Right.
Now, and then here, we run into the Prop 215. So now, this not only does the registered nurse, which was my first patient, have back surgeries, fused vertebrae, and many other illnesses, therefore, she went to the doctor and got her prescription or recommendation, as they call it, for medical marijuana. And at the point, I was her first, and I would pick up her prescriptions and bring it to her. Not only that, I would care for her as well. Now, we was domestic partners, and therefore, you know, I was a legal domestic partner as well. We moved here under corporate housing, meaning that we was paid for our housing, and it's the housing of Oakwood Apartments on Barham Boulevard.
Okay.
So this is where all corporate, many things, not only hospitals, but also studios, put their clientele up. They paid for it for approximately 1 year. Now, during this time, I have met many people that lived there, and they was already Prop 215 patients. Now, some of these patients, like I say, we lived in a gated community, so we was like family for 3 years. They also had legal recommendations, and one of them by the name of Gil, I won't mention the last name, he had been an automobile accident. So he was my neighbor below the apartment that I lived in, so I became his caregiver. And then another one of the patients, which was his roommate, his name is John. Now, he has serious mental conditions, ADD. I mean, he is absolutely in need of the medication. Not only that, he has a full disability rights and receives a disability check. So, therefore, we began to join a co-op situation based upon patients and nothing else. So the patients gather. I've already been signed by Susan's, but they all gather. They sign me to be their primary caregiver. Now, this is the biggest issue in the court battle. This has been going on for over a year. The residence that we was at, now, remind you, the patients live with me in the residence. Now, the patients and I was raided on the 8th of the 8th, 8/22 of 08, and we was raided at 8:35 a.m. Not only does it seem like something out of a Hollywood movie, it truly felt like it. I mean, I had a SWAT team with battering rams. I had their helmets, their vests, and their automatic weapons in my face and my patient's face at 8:30 in the morning. The cannabis was growing in the garage under lock and key. So when the investigators actually attempted to call these people, some of the patients answered. Remind you, it's 8:30 in the morning in California. So some of the patients do answer the phone. They do claim the marijuana plants as theirs, not mine. I am just a caregiver, providing assistance in that, as well as mainly assistance in many other ways. Now, the officers deny many of these facts. They deny talking to the patients. The actual charge is felony complaint 11358HS, cultivating marijuana.
Hmm. Now, what these officers that were involved in the raid, which agency were they with? Were they federal, state, county?
They was basically state. I mean, it was state of California, Van Nuys District. I actually have the actual arrest records here. Hmm. I mean, I actually have the actual complaint. It's arresting officer is Fox. His serial number is 33018. The searching officer is Chris Dent, and it is serial number 22690. They were the ones who actually was involved.
Well, let me ask you something, though, just to make sure I'm clear on this. This was just a cooperative grow. You got plants in the garage in this place where you live with these other patients. I mean, you're not like a storefront or anything where people are coming to buy marijuana.
The patients were just trying. They invested their own money to buy the lights and the equipment. It's a very small operation. Hmm. There was no intentions of ever distributing it. It was being grown for themselves.
Okay. So this case is still going on right now. Where does it stand right now?
Right now, I have been offered 8 plea agreements by the state of California because none of my patients was charged.
So you haven't accepted any of the plea deals then?
Absolutely not.
Good.
The last plea was a misdemeanor if I would plead to an ounce or more of medical marijuana, which meaning a misdemeanor, basically they would drop the case. My point is that the law Proposition 215, I have followed by the letter of the law. And I do mean that I truly read this law before I accepted the patient's plea for their help as a caregiver.
Hmm.
And I know for a fact that I followed the letter of the law.
It sounds like it to me, especially when you consider it's not any sort of what we can think of as a California dispensary where it's a storefront and people are coming in and buying in from, they'd just gotten their recommendation and they're coming to buy marijuana. These are people that were growing their own marijuana for themselves in a kind of a closed environment, a closed circle of people. This is exactly what Prop 215 was supposed to support. I want to get some support out to you, Brian, if I can. Is there any way my listeners can contact you or donate money to your cause, or is there a website or an email address they should know?
Absolutely. My email address, my personal email address is Brian_K_Phillips@Yahoo. Brian being spelled B-R-I-A-N underscore the letter K underscore PHILLIPS@Yahoo.com. I have been written in legally by law, by the 215 proposition anyhow. I am designated as their caregiver, and I had been picking up their medications for them as long as their pharmaceuticals at the CVS. I took my patients to out. They remind you again, they live with me. I took them to their outpatient surgeries. I took them to their doctor's appointments. Some of them had to go to therapies.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecutor in general seems to think that I do not fit the primary caregiver definition. Now, in the section of 2 in this proposition, 1136.2.5, in the section 2 in the article E, the purpose for this section, primary caregiver, means the individual designated by the person exempted under this act who has consistently assumed responsibility for the housing, the health, and the safety of that person.
Yeah. It sounds like you've gone above and beyond the call of duty in being an actual caregiver. I mean, we throw that term around a lot in the medical marijuana field here, but caregiving is more than just the medical marijuana. Like you say, it's the bathing and the caring for and the retrieving of prescriptions and the helping to get dressed and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Housing, everything you mentioned. This is a travesty of justice, and I really hope that the case turns out in your favor. Let me remind folks of the email address. It's Brian_K_Phillips@Yahoo.com. Is there a court date coming up for you that we could get people to show up in the courtroom for you?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I would love to all patients, whether they be mine or not. This not only losing this case could absolutely shoot down Proposition 215, in my opinion, because honestly, I have followed it to the letter of the law. Yes, August the 17th in Van Nuys Court. My case number is LA 059891, sir.
And we're going to do what we can to get you that support. We'll have it up on the blog at stash.normal.org, plus links to Brian's email address and the details on the court case. Brian, thanks for telling your story here on the Stash, and we hope we can get you some support.
One more thing, sir.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this.
Go ahead.
But I would love for any patient, Prop 215, any citizen of the state of California, to also flood the prosecution with many, many complaints and emails. I need complete support from not only the state, the people of the state who voted. I need complete support for the actual patients of Prop 215.
You got it. We'll put that out there for you. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder that the Radical Russ Summer of Bud Tour is accepting bookings to get me out to your local area to speak, to motivate, and to help you form a local Normal chapter if you don't have one in your area. Send me an email at stash@normal.org. All it takes to get me out to your location is a plane ticket, some money for expenses, and a place to crash. I am highly dedicated to getting marijuana regulated, and I'm willing to travel all over this country to do it. So please send me that email, stash@normal.org. We're also still looking for folks for the Normal Street teams in the San Francisco Bay Area and the Los Angeles County area, so please send me an email if you're interested in passing out flyers for the Normal National Conference, which takes place September 24th through 26. We'll be back tomorrow early with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.